Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today of Fascinating Women Who Lead, and we have a fascinating woman who leads today, and I am delighted to say that today we're going to be talking about educating women leaders, and I know there's so much more than that, but, you know, the crux is, what are we going to do to be able to showcase, and I'm hoping our guest today will help us with some techniques and key issues that women can learn in order to become effective leaders. So that said, our leading lady today is Dr. Frances Leslie, and she is the professor and dean of the graduate division of University of California, Irvine, so in Southern California. And Frances, I know you said call you Frances, so it's like say hello to all of our listeners and welcome.
Good morning, Michelle, and good morning, world. So.
I like that. Good morning, world. And I'm drinking my coffee. I don't know about you, but it is morning. It's a Monday, and I thank you for being on our show. And you are, I want all of our listeners to know, you are one of our award winners from our Women of Influence Awards in 2018. Super exciting for that. I'm sure you have many awards. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, just how can we help women become better leaders? And I know there's so much conversation about, you know, find a mentor, you know, make it a sponsor, not a mentor. What are some thoughts you have on where I think that's a really critical thing, but what are some things women can do, you know, to kind of find an effective mentor? Or, in your words, what are the keys to effective mentoring?
So I think that it's important to not just think about a single mentor. We have many different needs. Yes, we need sponsors. We need people to keep us authentic. We need people to help us with professional development. But the same person can't necessarily provide all of the guidance that we need. So I think it's really important that women set goals and then identify the people who can help them set those goals. And it shouldn't be a single person. And it shouldn't necessarily be a person who looks like them. It's just somebody who has the knowledge who can help them achieve that part of their goal. So when I was starting here at UC Irvine, there weren't many women. I was the first woman professor in my department, and I was the second woman in the School of Medicine. And so when I was going through the tenure review process, I didn't have anybody who looked like me to guide me, but there was a man who was about 2 years ahead of me in the department next door, and he's completely different from me, a big Italian-American, just looks nothing like me, but the one thing we had in common was that we were both going for tenure. So I didn't even necessarily think of him as a mentor, and I'm sure he never thought of himself as a mentor for me, but I just followed behind him. You know, when he went up for his mid-career review, which is one of the steps before you go for tenure, and he was successful, then I asked him what he did and how he had been successful. And so I just learned from his process. So I think it's really important. I work with a lot of young women graduate students here at UC Irvine. Some think, well, I can only be mentored by other women or other women who are in the same discipline as I am. That's not true. You just need to have somebody who has experience in what you want to do, and it doesn't matter who they are. They can help you.
I love that. You know, I think this is where I hear a lot of women, Frances, that they stumble and that we keep telling them, you know, as, let's say, the next generation of leaders, that's like, you know what, you need to be strategic about finding mentors. And, you know, I always hear women who will say, well, how do I do that? Like, how do I even identify or build a strategy around finding multiple mentors? Like, how would you recommend one of our listeners go about, like, finding, like, you identified that gentleman, you know, who was, you know, kind of like a little bit of a track ahead of you, and you said, okay, that's the guy that I want to have a mentor me on certain things. Like, how would you recommend our listeners find a mentor? How do they identify that? That's what I think is hard.
So I actually teach mentoring classes to the graduate students here at UC Irvine. And when we talk about finding a mentor, it's the responsibility of the mentee to control that relationship and to find the mentor. You can find mentors in all sorts of places. Even I tell them, just look around your peers. I mean, we always assume that a mentor is somebody above us, but that's not necessarily the case. There may be people at your level who have the experience that you're looking for who can help you out. So I think it's very important to network and to get out and meet people broadly. And then I give them advice about how to approach somebody as who you're interested in becoming a mentor. I suggest that they don't straight off say, will you be my mentor? That kind of puts people it puts them in a box, and it's a little too much responsibility. So I suggest contacting them, asking if you could meet for coffee, having a chat, but also being well prepared, having a script that you've rehearsed and knowing what it is that you want to ask. But rather than asking somebody to be your mentor, tell them what your goal is and ask them, is it possible for you for that person to help you reach that goal? I also say that, give them an out, because it's embarrassing if somebody has to say no. So I always say, ask them if they have time. We know that you're busy, and do you have time to do this? I'll fully understand if you don't. But then on the other hand, don't be afraid to ask anybody to do this. Although I'm busy, I have two jobs. I still run a scientific lab and I'm a full-time administrator. I still mentor people all the time. So you should never be afraid to ask somebody because you assume that they're too busy.
I love that. You know, there's another phrase I see a lot of women do is they'll say, hey, can we meet? Because I'd like to pick your brain. And I'm like, please, I don't ever want to have my brain picked, but I'm happy to be a resource or something like that. And I just think, oh, if there's one phrase we could lose as well is let me pick your brain.
Exactly.
So I
yeah.
love that. And I mean, do you see the trend that, and again, you kind of identify up and coming and the trending things. Do you see a lot of women really more than used to be taking charge of finding mentors and kind of being, you know, strategic about what they need and having multiple mentors? Do you see that as a positive trend of late?
I see it more and more in the students that I work with, but I think women are still often conditioned to not be the one in charge, and they feel like they are being a bully or a braggart if they go out in front. So I still see women who are afraid to do that, who feel that they shouldn't be pushing themselves forward. But this younger generation of women, there are many women who absolutely know it's their right to be in charge of their own lives, of their own careers, and to be strategic about it.
It's kind of sad still, right, that we're still having this conversation where, you know, women still are not getting to corporate office, you know, leadership positions and all that. And I know that's kind of the crux of what we want to talk about today. But, you know, I mean, when you think of what women need to learn in order to become better leaders, it's like, what's missing or what, you know, what do you see as you, because this is what you study. I'm really curious, like, what is the problem why women, you know, really are not being the leaders they can be? Some are. I see fabulous women leaders, and, you know, some of them scare me, I will say that, and others, it's like incite me and make me get, you know, they help me want to be a better leader. And then others, it's like women just kind of, they just go, oh, no, it's not worth it. So I'm curious, what do you recommend and what women can do to become better leaders from what you see every day?
So I think that it's really important to be yourself and not be somebody that others want you to be. And you shouldn't be intimidated. So one of the things that I teach here at UC Irvine is implicit bias. So implicit bias basically is how our brains work. I'm a neuroscientist, so I actually like this explanation. So for example, we don't want to think about when we see a seat, we don't have to reconstruct that seat in our minds and say, what do I have to do with this? You know, we know that we sit down when we see that seat. So that's how our brains work. And with everything that's happened in our childhood, all of our lifetime experiences, we establish these biases. And in many cases, they're appropriate, but sometimes they're not. So gender and racial biases are created in the same way. And one of the sad things is that women are often as biased against women as men are. So I used to have a position here at UC Irvine where I worked with faculty search committees to make sure that they did an unbiased review of the applicants. And I would go through all of the data. There are many studies that show that the implicit bias against women exists. And so I would share those studies. And then I would say to the faculty on the search committee, and women show the same degree of bias against women as men do. And the men all went, phew, wow. I'm not a male chauvinist pig. But and then I also, my job was not just to share with them that they did have bias and that we had to acknowledge that we have these biases, but that there are techniques that you can use to reduce the bias when you're looking at an applicant's file. You don't get distracted. You pay attention only to what you're doing, one thing at a time sort of thing. And you also have to keep in mind that you do tend to have these cognitive biases. So I think there's bias in the workplace. And you know, I'm not sure that that's something that can be easily overcome because it's innate to everyone. But I think what women have to do is to not allow themselves to be put off by that. They have to say, okay, you know, it's going to possibly be a little bit harder for me to be successful, but I can do it. I just have to set my goals, be myself, be authentic, and make sure I have a support network. That's where having a mentoring network becomes really important.
I love it. You know, there was a, I don't know if you, because again, this is some, I know I watch TV and we pay attention to women's leadership stuff. There was a women's doctrine, I think, from Madeleine Albright that was so fabulous. And it was on a show called Madam Secretary. Anyway, her and the current Secretary of State were having a conversation. And one of the things that she said is, you know, what do we need to do? And she was like, I know, we need to work twice as hard. You know, we need to speak up three times as much. You know, we need to realize that we can't be mediocre. I mean, it was just this whole doctrine. And, you know, and then the whole thing about women not supporting other women, there's like a place in hell for that. And I do find that. And I do find that women can be just sometimes as nasty, you know, if not more, with not supporting other women. I mean, do you, what should women do about that? How can we change that of women supporting other women more fabulously? Because I think it is changing in the entrepreneurial world, which is a lot of where I see it, but I still see it in corporate America where women just are not as supportive. The company, you know, lip service is that we need to, you know, kind of have women's initiatives and things, but there are still women that are not very supportive of others. What is your recommendation for how we can change that in corporate America? Anything?
I think that, as I said, I mean, well, so the world is a competitive place, and some people may see younger versions of themselves as being competitors. And I'm not sure there's very much that we can do about that, whether those are men or women who are feeling threatened. But I think that inviting those women to become mentors is an important way to move forward, because once they become part of a mentoring network and share their experiences as a woman with other women, I think that that can reduce those barriers. I know that there are women who pretend that it's not been any different for them, but it truly has been. Of course it has been. And if we can encourage those women to start becoming mentors themselves, I think it would help.
I love that answer. You know, you're the first person that's ever said, it's like, go approach those women as mentors. It's like, you know what? That's really wise advice, because I know one of the things for me in my corporate background, Frances, was that I went and approached men at upper management, you know, in my banking career, and just said, you know, I really would respect some advice you have. I was dealing with a commercial loan client or whatever. I made stuff up, and I would go visit some of the senior management. When I visited them, you know, in that upper management, you know, level offices, I would inevitably run into them, and they were so open, because, you know, they wanted to give their advice. They wanted to give their opinion. That allowed me to meet them a little bit, and so they kind of quasi, sort of, you know, became a mentor. But I got on the radar. I got, you know, great accolades for just being somebody that was interested in learning and you know, flourishing within the organization. And it really worked for me from a visibility standpoint. So I think there's all kinds of techniques we can learn from other women, which is where I want to get to with you. And that is, if you can share a little bit about your journey and really being, you know, successful and relevant within a very male-dominated career of school, four-year college, university institutions, because it is very male-dominated at the high-level leadership roles. How did you navigate that in your work experience?
So I actually think I have to give credit to my father. So I grew up in Scotland, and my father was Polish. And he basically came over after the Second World War. He had been in the Polish army. And he would get me books about Marie Curie. And Marie Curie was a Polish woman who won two Nobel Prizes. She discovered radiation, basically.
So
encouraged me to see somebody I would identify with, because I'm half Polish, as being a very, very successful woman. So I think that we can't forget the youngest generation, because I know that he also bought me a chemistry set when I was 8 years old for my birthday. And I went on to become a scientist. And I'm sure that that early experience, that early encouragement, and having an early role model such as Marie Curie, mm-hmm. somebody I could identify with as a woman and as a Polish woman, who was wildly successful, that gave
wow.
me the confidence to go on in my own career. And then, yes, as I went higher and higher up the ladders, so basically I did my undergraduate degree in Scotland, and then I went and did a PhD in Scotland. I was very fortunate because I was in a very small undergraduate degree program. It was a brand new program in pharmacology, and two faculty who ran that program decided that they thought that maybe there were chemicals in the brain that mimicked the action of morphine, and they needed someone to do the work. So I had been an undergraduate, and they asked me to stay on and do a summer project. And I was actually married at the time, and I had no intention of going on and doing a PhD, etc. But my summer project was successful, and so they said, would you stay and do a PhD? And my husband was going to do a PhD, and I thought, well, I'll be a PhD widow. Why not? I'll just do it. And I was very fortunate because I worked in the lab as a graduate student of that discovered the endorphins. And so I had a very early experience of scientific success. And we were a very small lab group, and there were few women, but I felt that I belonged and was part of the group that was making that contribution. As I went further up, so I came to Stanford to do a postdoc, and there I started to encounter resistance from males. So they saw me as competing for the same jobs as they were, and felt that because they had wives and children to support, that they should get those jobs and not me. So, you know, think that young women probably would still encounter those feelings among some male colleagues. But
yep.
basically,
yep.
You can't take it personally. So I've always treated my work as business. I have a circle of friends and family who are my personal support network, and I try not to mix business and personal. I have very strong compartments. So I have my work compartment and I have my home compartment, and I try to keep them as separate as possible so that if one goes badly, I've always got the other one to fall back on. So
yeah.
I basically just
smart.
Couldn't take those comments personally from my fellow workers. I just had to understand that it's a competitive world, and that if I was to be successful, I couldn't let those get me down. Then I was fortunate to get the faculty position here at Irvine, and I was the first woman in my department. The vice chair of the department when I started told me, oh dear, now we can't swear at our faculty meetings, etc. So I still always felt a little bit like an outsider, but it was interesting because of my early upbringing, and I think early upbringing is really very important. So my father was Polish, and
mm-hmm.
we lived in Scotland, which is where clans come from. It's a very clannish society, so he wasn't really accepted. And I felt like an outsider. And in the end, that became my greatest strength. I didn't need to please other people. There were a few personal friends and family whose opinions I mattered a great deal, and I did want to please them. But the broader world, my job wasn't to please them. It was basically to get on and do the work that I was doing. And so that's always been my greatest
right.
strength.
I love
not,
this.
Yeah.
No, I just want to interject because, you know, you're talking about what I think is fascinating, Frances, about you is, one, you know, there's this whole big, you know, initiative now to get more girls into, right, science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM as they call it, which we all know. And yet what's interesting, at least from what you've shared, is that your success in a male-dominated institution and industry is that you've learned to kind of be a communicator in the way you can. And I see so many women that go through and they become, you know, specialists, like they get technology degrees or they're in engineering. And, you know, with the world we have it and the social media piece, there's so many young adults coming out of school. And from an employer's perspective, what I hear frustrating is that some of these kids just, they can't communicate. They're smart at what they do, but the communication is so lacking today. I mean, do you see that? Is your role and UCI's role to kind of help some of
Absolutely.
These girls with the communication piece? That's such an important part.
And my role here as the graduate dean, the faculty are responsible for all their academic success, all the coursework, all the research that they do. And my job is to help them with professional development. So help them develop the broad set of skills that are necessary to become successful in a job in the outside world. And one
mm-hmm.
of the skills that we really emphasize is communication. So we have classes that teach them. Actually, it's one of our courses is run by a former actress who basically teaches our students how to present orally and using all the acting techniques. And then others help them develop writing skills. We have competitions. So we have a competition which we call Grad Slam here on campus, in which the students have to tell the story of their research in 3 minutes with only 3 slides. And the goal
oh, wow.
is to get them to be able to explain the importance of what they're doing to a non-specialist audience very, very quickly. So we have students compete to be our campus winner, and then all 10 of the University of California campuses select a winner, and then we all go up to the LinkedIn campus in San Francisco, and we have a UC system-wide Grad Slam final. It's really fun to see, you know, students from all sorts of different backgrounds being able to explain in a very entertaining way the research in 3 minutes. And we think that's really important. You know, academics, people with higher degrees, shouldn't separate themselves from the rest of the world. They need to be able to explain to everybody what they do and why they do it.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, we've only got a few minutes left, and I know I told you this time goes really fast, but for our listeners, what would be, you know, for wherever, and most of our listeners, Frances, are professional women, right? They're working for an organization, or they're going down the entrepreneurial path and running a small business or a middle market business, or CEOs in some cases. I'm kind of curious of what would you recommend as maybe 3 things that women can do to be, you know, a much better leader, and, you know, not only that, but to inspire and support the next generation. What would be the 3 things? I know I'm putting you on the spot, and I don't mean to, but I'm like, I know you have a lot in you, so inspire us, Frances. What would be those things?
Well, you know, when I was younger, I was always happy to be second in command, but I never wanted to be the front person. And then, almost by accident, I became a leader. I became a director of an NIH-funded center. And it was tough. I actually, being an academic, I went to the books to see, okay, because, you know, my male colleagues weren't exactly accepting me as a woman leader. Mm-hmm. Academia will be a little sexist. And so I went to the books. And one thing that stuck with me, and I know that, you know, your audience know this very well, but I've seen it many times, women have to sit at the table, literally. I've seen often that women choose to sit in the back of a room or on the side of a room rather being at the table with other decision makers. So it's very, very important for women to participate and not be shy about it. I think you have to be your authentic self. You can't pretend to be somebody that you're not. But it takes a while to get there. So when I first started here, I was 29 years old, and I was teaching medical students, many of whom were older than I was. And so to begin with, I created a character of Dr. Leslie teaching. And actually, I won a teaching award that year, my very first year here. And I've never won one since, because I gradually felt more comfortable in the role and I didn't feel I needed to act. So I've never won the teaching award since, but I am comfortable in my role now. So I think it's very important for you to accept your role and to accept who you are in that role. And then the third thing I think is don't take it personally and don't worry about bias. Don't try to please everybody. You will not please everybody. There are only some key people that you need to please, your boss being one of them, and your family and friends being others. So those would be my 3 takeaways.
Wow, that's pretty good. I mean, seriously, I think I'd like to have you back on a number of fronts. And I got to say, just because we're in Southern California and in Orange County, and UC Irvine has such a great reputation, you know, as a school and a university and preparing, you know, young, I call them young boys and girls now because I'm on the older side of the fence. But, you know, there's just, if there's anything we can do to be supportive with our Women's Association, we'd love to do that. And we get excited about women's advancement. So, you know, thank you for being our lovely leading lady today. I'd love to have you back again because I think there's things we didn't talk about. Those were great slices of advice. And, you know, I know one woman, it's like one woman supporting another woman, you know, Frances, it's like that can be just a game changer for women's advancement. So thank you for your wise advice. And to our listeners, you know we are here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. for a Women Lead Radio show. And to all of our listeners, I want to say thank you for listening. And just know one thing we can all do to be supportive of other women is, you know, when you are getting your success, it's like take a moment and help the next one in line. We'll see you on the next show.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.
www.connectedwomeninfluence.com.